Welcome to the E-Commerce Lab by eComsy. This is the place for everything related to Amazon private label and e-commerce. Learn exactly what you need to start or scale your business. Get insights from the top industry experts who will discuss the latest trends and best practices in the world of Amazon. From choosing products and sourcing from a supplier to setting up your Amazon account and marketing your business, you will hear it here. Let's get started. Here is your host, Vincenzo Toscano.
Hello, guys. Welcome to another episode of the E-Commerce Lab by eComsy, the place of everything related to Amazon FBA, parallel and e-commerce. My name is Vincenzo Toscano, founder and CEO of eComsy, and today I bring another special guest. His name is Sam Agger, and he's the co-founder of Makeshift, one of the top solutions out there when it comes to figuring out and making your reporting on Amazon easier. And I think that's so important nowadays because I feel, and I know that from a fact because I do a lot of audits, most Amazon sellers don't even know what are the real numbers in terms of KPIs, profitability. They don't really know how to get the huge matrix when it comes to Amazon and all the fees involved and numbers in the back end, and really make some actually reporting when it comes to, you know, something that makes sense for them so they can make decisions in their business moving forward. And that's where, you know, Sam's tool is amazing for that. So that's why I wanted to bring Sam on board today, because I want to talk about all the things that are key when it comes to reporting and how tools such as Makeshift can really be the solution for you. So Sam, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you on board. So how's everything, bro? Yeah.
Thanks for having me, man. Yeah, it's really good to see you. We caught up a little bit at Prosper, but good to see you back in your new studio, relatively new studio, I think, in London. Super cool.
Yeah, thanks
for having me. Appreciate it.
A pleasure, bro. Pleasure. We met, that's true, in Prosper. We had a good time there at the Prosper floor, but also we did some party in the all the networking events that usually happen at Prosper. So it was a very good time to, you know, really get to know each other. And I feel that's what Prosper is about. I mean, for all those listening and watching this episode, I always invite, you know, people to go to events. I feel that, especially in our community, we Amazon sellers and entrepreneurs, like, we always stuck on an office behind a laptop. And I think those are the small opportunities that come, you know, every couple of weeks that you can go out there and meet other like-minded people, which I think is super important.
Yeah.
So let's start with you, Sam. You have a very interesting background, and I want to start with a little bit about that, like introduction about who is Sam and what made you, you know, found your company. So give us a little bit of that before we dive into, you know, all the technicality about reporting. Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of threads probably to pull on there of what led to this moment, certainly. But going back, I met actually my co-founder, Todd Vanderstelt, in Colorado here about 8 years ago. At that time, he had just exited Amazon from Amazon headquarters in Seattle. He was working on the vendor side, primarily textbooks, as well as headphones and AV accessories. He actually built the Hands Off the Wheel program, if anybody's familiar, on the vendor, the 1P side, which is Amazon's end-to-end supply chain automation. Yeah. And one of the little jokes we like to make is Todd is now making up for all those sins and those the pains that he caused by creating that system. And one of the ways he did that was helping build agencies and helping brands on Amazon directly. He hired me into a very early agency in Boulder, Colorado at that time, about 8 years ago, 7 years ago now. And really the genesis for Makeshift started then. You know, Todd and I always kind of had an intention to build software. And what we realized is we were solving those problems we were running into as an agency very naturally, kind of skunk work style. A big part of that was just data flow. You know, back then in the nascent stage of the APIs as they were then, it was really hard to get data out of Amazon. We were doing everything manually, pulling down reports, exporting them, trying to save them, crying when the structure changed or something broke, you know, trying to scale an agency from 10, 20, 50, 100 clients and doing reporting and analytics consistently at a high level with good quality, but also really feeling like we had a handle on the data. When we were walking into the calls, we wanted to know what the heck was causing change, what was actually driving and contributing to changes in the accounts. And so we had built some tools for ourselves even back then that ended up really becoming kind of the basis for Makeshift and the platform that we have today. How we built Makeshift, you know, kind of over the last 5 years was mostly doing data as a service, you know, just helping agencies that maybe didn't have that data analyst internally or an engineer to be able to like tap into the APIs, build out a database or a data warehouse backend. Like it's hard, you know, and that's not usually, you know, something that an agency owner even would want to endeavor to do. And if they do, they find that it's really hard, you know? And so, you know, we really dedicated ourselves to figuring that out for agencies. I think along the way, you know, after building, I say it jokingly, but I think I probably built over 1,000 Looker Studio dashboards at this point. Like, and I'm not, you know, I'm not being facetious. I think that's a legit number. You know, for a long time, we just thought we couldn't build reporting into a platform, you know, because we really thought the BI tool was the answer. But in time, we realized two big things. Well, three big things. One, Looker Studio, Tableau, Power BI have their own limitations. You know, you can't control that experience in there. And often you're kind of dependent on their support if something goes wrong or breaks. Very hard. Like Looker Studio and Google Data Studio back in the day were not supported pretty much at all. Like you had to go to a community dashboard. Really hard for us as a provider then to be kind of the pass through if something broke. Like it just didn't make sense. To, you know, scale, like as you were bringing a lot of data into those platforms, it often break, you know, and I think there's a tipping point there. That's a challenge. And then three, I think there's limitations of the UI. Like there's just things we can do in our software that we couldn't do in Looker Studio that provide a lot of value, you know, things like transforming the data and tracking, you know, new versus repeat customers and first purchases, doing a lot of like, you know, just the things that you couldn't manipulate and do within the confines of those BI dashboards. And, you know, ultimately we just saw a lot of patterns. You know, we had a pretty good perspective and opinion on what we wanted to deliver as reporting from our, in our agencies. And we started to see those trends and patterns in all the dashboards we were building. And so 2023, we set out to kind of build our native reporting solution in our platform. It was really kind of the tip of the spear in the sense that we knew people needed this support, because even if we gave them a custom dashboard in Looker Studio or wherever, there still was this maintenance issue. They didn't have the person internally that could just run with it, you know, until you get a little bit larger and you can hire that person who is not like a revenue producing, you know, head on your squad, right? Like that's a hard call for agency owners to make that hire, and it's not a profit center for them. And so we set out to build it. Our whole thing, Vincenzo, too, as you know, we've discussed before, is like we want to help agencies operate better. We want to build operating systems. One of those big things is reporting, because we just knew how painful it was every month to be pulling data and trying to format reporting and do it again and again without any kind of scale. It was a, you know, and it's not, it's a huge time suck and not a big value add. And it wasn't, you know, allowing us to work on the things that really mattered for our clients. So that was like,
most of the time, just to make a parenthesis, because this is a funny thing, we spend so much time on reporting. And most clients don't even read it sometimes. You send a report, they don't even care. So it's like, it's such a waste. But yeah, continue.
Completely. And you also have the flip side, which is then you have also the client that wants all the data.
Every single KPI. Details. Yeah.
And you can't, and you know, and you give them everything. And then you also have questions coming up constantly that you aren't able to get out ahead of, which is why actually we can talk about it in a little bit, but in our latest iteration of our client portal, what we call Share Center, we gave the ability to basically lock down reports to previous periods as view only. So the client can't see, like if you have month to date or week to date data, they're not poking around in stuff that number one hasn't settled, by the way, because Amazon's attribution is still happening both on ads and on sales.
It's so comparing and all of that is, I know.
It's going to look horrible when you compare week over week when the data isn't, you know, fully attributed, right? Like, and so we built in some of these features that we learned, again, some of the limitations of the BI dashboards. You know, we just really were paying attention a lot to how we wanted to support the agency to client interaction. Like that's really where we live. So that's kind of one layer of what we do with agency operating systems. You know, reporting is a big part of that. We, kind of have the philosophy, like you can grow your agencies in two different ways. And you probably need to do both, which is add more clients, of course, mm-hmm. which is always, and it's a huge pain for agencies. And then it's also become more profitable, be more efficient, right? And so mm-hmm. when we build our tools, we're really building for the agency, not for sellers and brands. You know, although we have a few on our platform with our Share Center reporting, we are trying to help agencies double their capacity and therefore their profitability. That means you can manage more clients with the same heads and, you know, just get better utilization rates out of each of the folks on your team, because they now have all these things on rails for them that they don't have to think about. Like when month-end reporting comes up or bi-weekly reporting comes up, they already know the reporting's done with the client. All they got to do is actually compile their comments and notes, which, by the way, we're capturing in the platform. That's something we're working on right now, to be able to just tell that story of like what happened, you know, in the previous period, and giving them the ability to go do the deep dive to actually know what happened, which is where our bridge engine comes in. It's kind of our intelligence layer. It's something we worked on a long time ago and have had as an important element of the platform. And now we're kind of bringing it to the surface in a lot of different really cool ways. So, you know, just to bring it full circle, we believed that we could build a native reporting solution. I think we've succeeded in that now. We're add to that library of reports. The basic idea is like, there's no setup. You activate your accounts and the reports are ready and done for you. And then we provide the ability to customize those enough without having to do a bunch of configuration and setup, customize them enough to be useful for you and for the client. And what we realized after we released Report Center, which were kind of the basic library of reports, is there's really two different major use cases, which we found our users were really using the reports to do deep dives into the account, which we didn't really anticipate. We didn't think like, but we built them with enough flexibility. Todd, to his credit, you know, he's a data nerd and he likes to go down to the deepest level. He built in that level of, you know, level of diagnostics into the reports, where it's useful for you as a manager of the account to be able to get answers to like what's causing change period over period, like what's actually happening. One of the ways that we allow you to customize the reports are through tags and labels. So you can actually roll up your entire catalog. You can label with a bunch of different custom tags, as well as all of your campaigns. And where that becomes incredibly valuable is when you have clients asking like, well, how did this product line perform?
Exactly.
How much are you spending on that ASIN relative to this one? Right? How much are you spending on this color or this size or this, you know, those are, and, or maybe you have objectives for your budget, right? For your campaign budgets. Okay. Yeah. You've got a directive to spend 80% of your budget on new customer acquisition and 20% on brand protection. Through the labels, my clients that I still have from way back in the day are able to literally just pull up the dashboard that they bookmarked. It already has the label applied and they can see how we're pacing for the month. They can see what that spend breakdown is. It removes so many questions that I have to field in email because we've already organized the data in the way that they want to see it without having to spend all the time to build that custom dashboard somewhere in a BI tool. Right.
I think it's super. I think, the potential and the that you guys bring to the table in terms of customization is so important, because that's another conversation I always have with sellers all the time, that when we talk about reporting, they say, okay, but why do I need reporting if I can just download, and this is crazy, I can download the Excel from Amazon. I could just see the figures and try to make a sense on my own. It's like, and that's crazy, because first of all, the data Amazon gives you, and you know that all the Excels are a mess, like, the way the labels and everything, you cannot really make any sense. And if you don't really put everything into a dashboard, it's very complex to really make any sense. And we're going to try to get with this.
Join retail and ad data, right? Like to actually combine your, if you want to get tacos reporting, difficult, right?
Yeah.
Especially if you want to go
have to do it on your own.
Yeah,
exactly. And I think to some extent, I'm not saying that's like made in purple, but to some extent, like sometimes Amazon hides certain KPIs to not make you really see the fact that sometimes you are really underperforming very bad, or make you, you know, pull the decision, you know what, stop Amazon, right? I feel sometimes there's some gaming around what they share with you and what they don't. And for sure, like when we use tools like yours, that when we connect and we see the whole picture, it's another game altogether. Now, the concern that sometimes people have, and that's another thing I want to bring to the table, is the limitation that sometimes this API may have, because I know there's some limitation in terms of how much data you can pull, how often, all of that. So from your experience, like, what is usually your feedback for people that want to use a tool for reporting in terms of understanding the expectations of so the limitation that an API may have? Because you always have this thing that say, oh, in Amazon it says 1,200, in the tool say 1,198. Why? Like, and they don't understand, like, can you explain so people understand why that happens when you use it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we could have an entire, like...
I know it's very technical, but high level, why that happens. Yeah.
Yeah, high level, I'll tell you a couple things. One, on the advertising side, there's limited look back. This has always been the case, right? They have varying look back. You can sometimes get 90 days, sometimes 60 days initially. So, I mean, once we connect with a merchant, we pull that data forever then forward, right? Mm-hmm. And so we have your history as long as you've connected with us. But yeah, there's a limitation there. I'm really surprised they haven't actually opened up at least campaign level data for further lookbacks. Very strange, because it's there. I really don't have a good answer for why.
I always think about that. It's like, why wouldn't you share it with me? I don't know.
Yeah. Strange. So there's one limitation. That's the major limitation on the ad side. Mm-hmm. I will say ads have gotten a lot better in parity to, you know, for example, comparing the API data to the console. They've gotten better because for a long time, they were literally on different data shards. So what we were pulling from the API was not synced up to what was feeding the console. So you constantly have this difference. The other complication that is always true is Amazon, although they wanted to be API first, they've stated that. The reality is they come out with new ad types that they haven't even built the reporting for.
Exactly.
And that's just like, we're SOL, like we're crap out of luck, right? Like there's no way around it. So
no mapping, right, there's no mapping essentially of the data. Yeah.
There's literally no reporting. I mean, for example, like I think a good, there's been many occasions, but right now, one of the ones we really want in the console is ASIN or creative level reporting. Mm-hmm. So you can actually track performance by creative on the sponsored brand side. Now, there's no export. We do get some of that in the API. So we're starting to integrate that and try to figure out the solution. But that's actually an inverse example where they came out with some of the data in the API, but not in the console yet. So people are like blind. It's really funny. Yeah, there's no rhyme or reason. And it's just because Amazon's teams are very separate and siloed and they do their thing and they're focusing on their objective. And, you know, they move fast that way. It has comes with a lot of positives, too. It's just a challenge on the reporting side. On the retail side, I think what a lot of people don't realize is that business reports data, so what we typically check in the dashboard in Seller Central, is its own data source entirely. They do not reconcile it to orders data. It is reported differently. There are often varying discrepancies, and you'll never know why, because there's no such thing as a true up to the actual underlying orders. So let's say an order gets canceled or returned.
Yeah, it never gets much. Like you have more orders in the business report than what you actually have. It's a mess, I know.
So when you want to do certain things, like for example, we provide customer LTV and we separate new versus repeat customers. We do that via the orders data because it includes some metadata that enables you to distinguish customers, right? Also enables us to do like purchase path analysis and cohort analysis and show you like, you know, if a customer purchases this product first, like what do they purchase after? Is that a good customer? Does it contribute to LTV? Mm-hmm. Like what's the contribution margin? Really cool stuff. Can't do that with the business reports data, right? So when we're looking at that report, it's going to be slightly different than the business report. And it's simply because those two things are not the same. And I would also like the third just like variable wrench to throw into the mix is your payments data. So the finance data is different than the business reports data.
That's a mess. Yeah.
But I will say the finance data is at least going to reconcile to the orders data, though the timing of the things might be different. So you also have things like the orders data is reported in UTC. And when you export the report, it actually adjusts it in the export, but you don't really know how that relates to business report data, right? So there's a lot of funny little timing things and just offsets that cause differences. we try to use business reports kind of as the source of truth for reporting simply because of that very reason. Like, that's what we look at. That's what our clients look at in Seller Central. Yeah. But there are just things we really want to do with the data that aren't necessarily possible with business reports. So that's when we end up having some discrepancies. Yeah.
But now you mentioned there's something very interesting, and I feel that's where the conversation is going to go in 2024, which is the lifetime value of clients. Let's be honest, competition, Amazon's getting more fierce, PPC is getting more expensive, more saturation. And I feel the conversation is, and I have started to see that, especially on big sellers, like they don't worry anymore that much on tacos or ACOs. They worry about lifetime value because it's the same that when you work on D2C, you don't worry about that initial sell. Is about how many times the people come back to you and you can retarget them, right? So these are KPIs that you cannot do on your own, as you mentioned. But I'm intrigued to also learn from you, like, what other KPIs besides this one that is very important you feel like, for example, your tool, we can identify that you feel that are so key nowadays for an Amazon business. Like, what are some of the other things most Amazon sellers are underlooking because they simply don't have access on the Seller Central? They will have to figure out on their own. Yeah,
there's a lot of directions I could go with this. I think there's two that come to mind really clearly for me. The first is just a better delineation of customer LTV. So actually separating your like one-time customers from your repeat customers and understanding the behavior differences in their purchase path through your catalog, right? Which is why we do things like tag the first purchase. So you can actually build cohorts based on how they come into your brand and start to segment on those bases, because I think it also really changes how you think about nurture paths through brand tailored promotions, through like one basic question. And you get a little bit of this in brand analytics, but it's much harder to figure out, is like, well, if a customer buys X product, what is the Y product I should cross merchandise or cross sell or promote with? Via brand tailored promotion or otherwise, right? And I think we're going to get this ability to do this a lot more in advertising very soon via some of the retargeting and things that I think are going to be possible in sponsored display very soon. Like, I think with AMC coming online, Amazon Marketing Cloud, and the ability to actually track a customer all the way through, I think you're going to start to get these enriched audiences, and having this understanding of what your best customer looks like is probably the next cut that most should start focusing on. We do that very already natively in our reporting. Like, if you signed up with our Share Center, you would actually have an LTV report that already breaks this out by new versus repeat customer down to the SKU level, so that you can see like, where am I winning most of my new customers, and there, and where is the majority of my repeat customers coming back through, like which product line, which size, which price point. Like, we are able to kind of stitch that together. And then we do some advanced analytics for some folks as well, one-offs, where, you know, I think one of the things, especially as profitability becomes such a critical question to answer, as all these fees start to stack up on us, the placement fees and all these different things, right, is to understand what a given SKU contributes to your profit margin over the lifetime of that customer. Because the analysis today, what is typically done is you go, okay, are we profitable on this SKU? Yes or no? Pull the settlement data, pull the finance data, let's look at it, and let's attribute advertising as best we can, because sponsored brands, yada, yada, right? We're going to do some kind of attribution methodology, which I actually think are broken in a lot of tools, because the attribution doesn't make sense. And I think there's a difference between a finance attribution and an advertising attribution. For sure. Something we're working through right now. But they go, hey, this SKU isn't profitable. And what they miss is that SKU might be contributing to acquiring your best customers.
Yeah, it's a lead magnet. Yeah,
it's a lead magnet. It's a tip of the spear. It's a loss leader, is what we would call it, right? You might break even or even take a little bit of a loss on this product, but if you can't track that customer, those purchases, which is why we transform the data coming out of Amazon, right? Which is the advantage of working with the API data. So you can do those manipulations, those transformations. We say, okay, well, let's tag those first purchases. Let's find that entire cohort of folks that are purchasing that product. And then let's compare that LTV and what they do from a purchase standpoint against the rest of the, you know, audience. of the customer base and see if we're actually right. If this product is being purchased only once or twice and it's below the average of the number of purchases by customers, and those customers don't look as good as the other customers that maybe come in on a different product, okay, kill it, right? We're unprofitable and it's not leading to good customers. But if you kill that SKU and it's the one that's leading to really good customers that are contributing margin to you over the lifetime, over, you know, 2, 3, 4 years, you are going to have a very bad time for the next months and years. And you will not really be able to disseminate.
You will never know. Yeah, exactly.
You will not know because the day it's completely gone. You won't be able to see, you know, you'll see, well, yeah, we lost, you know, what, 20K in sales, whatever, from this SKU. What you won't see is like, well, we also lost 20% of our sales from all the other SKUs as well, because we weren't able to now acquire those customers with our lower price point product, maybe that was really attractive, our variety pack that maybe is a pain in the butt to package, but is a great attractor and acquiring
intro product,
right? So I think this is how brands need to shift their thinking, is to be thinking about that journey. Amazon's making it a lot easier for us to nurture those customers over time with brand tailored promotions and posts and storefront, all this stuff, right? Lean into it, you know, and really understand the economics and dynamics of how customers navigate through your catalog. So that's big one, number one, right? Like that I think is going to be the conversation as profitability becomes harder and harder to come by. The second one I would say is related, but it's one that's really hard to figure out.
Okay.
In a lot of profitability tools today, when you look at ASIN level profitability with ad spend attributed, the way that there's that most tools are attributing ad spend is really, really unfair.
I know where you're going. Yeah.
Yeah. And what happens is you look at the SKU and you go, oh, we are so unprofitable on that. Turn off advertising today.
Exactly.
But what you're missing are the sales that it's contributing to in other SKUs. And so you may spend 90% of your budget on this one ASIN that is looking really unprofitable, but it's leading to 90% of your other SKU sales. So even though, and the good news is like for sponsored products, they attribute all of the ad sales, right?
Exactly.
But what they don't do is like with sponsored brands and sponsored display, which has to be allocated somehow, some way. I think there's this big miss in understanding like, hey, yeah, that SKU is not great from a profitability standpoint when we advertise on it, but it does lead to acquiring these new customers and also selling through to our other products. So I think one area of emphasis and what we try to do, we're actually prototyping this right now, is combining what is like advertised ASIN data and purchase product data. And it's getting better. There's no perfect match. In fact, the data never really lines up perfectly. But figuring out a better way to fairly judge products based on the overall activity that they actually drive, including the LTV and the contribution margin, but also what they do from an exposure, impression, awareness, and ad sales standpoint, that I think we like when you are narrowed in and you're looking just at this single ASIN and its activity, and you're taking its ad spend, you're like, we're not profitable on that one. And yet you're driving so many more sales for the rest of your catalog. And then you turn that one off again, really hard to roll back and say, what the heck happened after the fact when you turned off this volume that was coming through this, you know, lower margin SKU. You really see this often too, I would say, Vincenzo, for agencies or brands that are more arbitrage based, right? Like they aren't necessarily building a brand. They've got categories and niches that they really do well in, but they're kind of like white labeling product and, or private labeling product. And they don't have a brand to rely upon. So profitability becomes the main KPI that they're following. It really puts them at a disadvantage advertising wise, because they can't take a longer approach and say, hey, we're willing to invest in this because we do have a 2-year time span on this customer that we know is going to purchase on average 5.3 times from us and contribute X margin. So we just got to kill that SKU today without really knowing what the ramifications are going to be for the rest of our catalog. So those are the big two, I think, that I think are going to be really kind of put under a microscope over the next year or so.
Yeah. And I think they're huge, to be honest, because I mean, I have so many conversations, especially during, you know, the post-pandemic, when all these people were trying to kill as many unprofitable products as fast as possible because they had so much overhead. They are all these inventory sitting around, they were liquidating. And a lot of them, they basically kill a lot of SKUs, and they could never recover overall in terms of revenue. And when you dive in into their business, you can definitely see that, yes, you are losing money in certain SKUs, but it's because you didn't take in consideration all the traffic that these SKUs were bringing, because maybe they were number one on certain keywords that, yes, you are paying crazy CPC, but then they buy, let's say you are selling, I don't know, like a water bottle, but then the water bottle made them also buy your yoga mat, and then the yoga mat made them use your gym equipment, and it's like a chain effect that I feel, to be honest, most people don't consider that. And that's why I made you this question, because I've been going to so many events, and I feel like nobody's talking about lifetime value or how to even identify this in the first place. Everything is about tacos, about acres, it's about profitability. But let's be honest, guys, like if we really want to build a brand, we need to start bringing our KPIs into the mix. Yeah. And I think the ones you just mentioned there are the perfect way to really steer the ship towards that direction. So super important.
Yeah. And I think as an agency, like this is a much bigger problem, because I'm sure you've experienced this, Vincenzo, right? With your clients, agencies' roles are changing every day. And part of that is because automation and AI are becoming such a large part of what we do. The value prop of the agency has to shift toward being a truly strategic partner.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not only changing bits.
and I think, to put it bluntly, like you are going to get asked these questions, or you should actually be teaching your sellers to think this way. And the reason is because if you want the ad budgets and you want the ability to grow a brand and you want the flexibility to do what you're really good at, you have to convince the brands and the sellers like, hey, there's a bigger picture here. We need to start with LTV and work backward. Because if we lose focus on like what actually matters long term, which, by the way, which is why the SQP, like search query performance, category share data, I think becomes much, much more important over time, because you have to show them like, hey, we're gaining category share and this matters for all of our other channels too, by the way. You have to focus on the right metrics and really get them to understand and buy into this idea of like, hey, we're building a customer. You know, we're not generating a single sale for you. We're building a customer. And unless you can prove that out in the data through your reporting and through your analytics, very hard to have that conversation, right? Which is why we want to support that, because we believed, and we even saw this back in the day, like the best clients for us were the ones that bought into the idea of building a brand over the long term and were willing to strategically make those bets and put their chips on the table and use the data to lead their strategy. The ones that are reactionary and are like hunting down pennies on profitability, and like you've felt this, right? This pinch, very, very hard to succeed for them if they're not bought into this idea of like, hey, we have to build a funnel. We have to build a customer. We have to focus on things that are longer term that set us up to be category leaders where you actually can get some profitability, right? Okay. How much of the first page of Amazon is taken over by ads now? 60% plus?
70% sometimes,
Like, unless we are building brand presence where we can rely on a certain portion of our revenue coming from repeat customers that we don't have to pay for to return to us every month, we're going to be in a world of hurt if we're competing only on that, you know, pay to play basis. Like, we have to build brand over time, which is why the purchase path and all these other things become so critical, because you have to really create science out of the data that says, here's where we need to be. Like, these are the products we should be pushing. And our ACoS might look 20 points better,
which let's be honest, is branding 101. It's like what the big brands have been doing all this time outside of Amazon. Just that on Amazon, at the beginning, we had it easy, and now it's not the case. And people don't really know how to do branding. And that's why they're struggling.
And I think it's also just an understanding. Like, I think you're finally getting some of the collective knowledge to believe that you own the customer on Amazon. because of AMC, because of Brand Teller Promotions, because of the ability, Amazon is trying. It's there. We always get conflicting messages through, you know, some of the things they do, like the different fees versus, you know, Brand Teller. Like some of these things like provide conflicting message, you know, signals to us. But I just think for agencies to really move into being that strategic advisor, you know, in the next 2, 3, 5, 10 years, as automation and AI become a bigger part of like the daily tasks we do, we ask ourselves, what is the value that we are providing? You know, and it is actually providing true strategy and insight to building a sustainable business on Amazon, which you just have to move into some of these more data-driven conversations where you're not talking about feelings, right?
Exactly.
Like we laugh about this, but you know, if you're good at Amazon, you can get away with this with a lot of clients. You can jump on a call, look at the data. It's like, oh, that's because, you know, we saw competitive pressure here and yada, yada, yada. I think those days are leaving. And unless you are able to, you know, duplicate yourself, like Vincenzo, you have deep Amazon expertise. I bet I could put a report in front of you and give you 5 minutes and dump you on a call. And I bet you could do just fine walking through it because you know what things are correlated, right? You could look at it and go, oh, well, it's probably because of this.
And connect the dots. Yeah.
Right. You could connect them on the fly. Not for agencies that are hiring, you know, young folks out of school that don't have like an operational marketing background, which by the way, is a totally different paradigm. It's not digital marketing. It is so much more than that. Hard to train for. So you have to put these processes on rails to give them the stuff that actually builds a narrative that is data supported. So you're not putting your managers in bad spots either on those calls. That's really what we're trying to support is like, as you start to add folks to your team, can you loop them into a process that actually helps them feel supported and doesn't back them into a corner with the data every time they jump on a call with a client, right?
I agree. Yeah. That's awesome, Sam. So yeah, what a way to close the, you know, the episode. I think we cover, you know, all the things that honestly had in mind, because I strongly believe these are some of the KPIs and things people should start tracking on their business. And I know, you know, you guys can definitely support with that, with your company and everything within Makeshift. So what I would like to describe basically to our audience today is how people can get involved, because I know you guys have like a special like offer and everything. So tell us a little bit about how people can start using Makeshift. Yeah.
I mean, you know, what we say too is like, we're not trying to work with 10,000 sellers. We're trying to work with 100 great agencies. Right. And so, you know, if you're an agency or a brand too, I think we're actually just releasing something called Share Center, our client portal tomorrow. Which I think gives the opportunity to have our reporting, our out of the box, pre-built, no setup reporting for you. If you just want that as kind of like a standalone and you want to see some of the stuff we were talking about today, you know, for, if you mentioned Ecomsy and Vincenzo, just let me know you guys saw the episode, and we'll do $50 per report for any merchant, or $50 per merchant for all of our library of reports, just as an intro offer, if you want to check it out. We also have a free trial to the platform for the first 30 days. So you can check it out. No obligation. See the whole suite. We have a bunch of other really cool stuff in there, including something called our Bridge Engine, which is a true like contribution to change calculator. We're working on anomaly detection, weekly business reviews, some really neat stuff. I'd love to have you come check it out. Share Center is kind of the cool thing right now that I think just gives you that reporting on rails and reduces all the headache and challenges of, you know, spinning up reporting every time at the end of the week or end of the month.
Yeah. Awesome, Sam. So thank you so much. Pleasure to have you on the show.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to meet you soon at upcoming events. Yeah. Thank you so much, man.
Thanks, Vincenzo. Appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the E-Commerce Lab by Ecomsy. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. While you are at it, we would appreciate it if you could leave an honest rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. That will make it easier for others to find out about the show and benefit from it. Want more? Visit our website at www.ecomsy.com, where you can get your first consultation for free. Or find us on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn at ecomsy.